where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
Well, hello, and thank you for joining us. This week on Masterpiece Theater, we discover the intricacies. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good to see you. How are
you? Good to see you. I'm good. We didn't just spend all morning together. I'm good.
Or our lives.
It's true.
It's really how this works.
Oh, excuse me if I'm coughing.
Does the audience know we're married? Or do they just think we have really good rapport?
I don't even think they're we're real people. I think they just think we're made up characters.
Two artificial intelligent bots.
We play a couple on a podcast.
Bots with +5 sass attributes and +7 sexiness. Well, welcome to the show. I am Scott. She is Allison. On this week's show, same as always, you know what I'm talking about. But before we get into the things we found that you, our valued listeners, sent to us, we went to Chi-Town, went to Chicago for, I had a gig.
You did.
At the airport, Hyatt in Chicago, O'Hare Airport, and we decided we'll spend a Valentine's weekend because me being a poor husband that I am, left for a gig on Valentine's Day. So I figured, how do we take this up a notch? And since Valentine's weekend and the airport Hyatt do not usually go together, we decided, hey, why don't we spend the weekend in Chicago because we love the city, but let's maybe go up a star level. And so we decided on the Ritz-Carlton.
The funny thing about it is I don't think it really registered with me that it was Valentine's weekend. So you're going to laugh about this. I knew you were home on Valentine's Day. You left halfway through the day.
Right.
And it's not a big deal to me. I'm not obsessed with Valentine's Day. It's nice. And I got a beautiful sweater and I liked it.
She's all mine, fellas. She's all mine.
But I didn't really think about the weekend as being special because it had just been Valentine's Day. I still wouldn't have wanted to stay at the airport hotel. So that's true for all trips, by the way, in the future as well. Always opt out of the airport hotel.
Hyatt. Yeah. Great venue for a conference, by the way. Really appreciated the client bringing me in, but not a romantic weekend.
No.
For
airport
sure.
Hotels aren't particularly romantic.
So unbeknownst to my wonderful wife, I'm in cahoots with the Ritz-Carlton. And here's how the cahoots started. So like anything, you book a hotel and you online and you get an email confirmation. Well, I then got another email from the guest relations team at the Ritz-Carlton. It says, we look forward to welcoming you to the Ritz-Carlton Chicago. Thank you for choosing our hotel for your upcoming stay. In anticipation of your arrival, we would like to offer assistance with anything you might need to make sure your stay is unique, memorable, and effortless. Making arrangements is highly recommended to ensure your preferred activity times are available. It is our pleasure to assist you with dining, spa, transportation needs, or anything else you require. Please visit our hotel website for more details about the various leisure activities. The details we have your reservation are here. Please let us know the following, your itinerary, your arrival, and et cetera, if you're celebrating a special occasion. So it's a form email that other places can say or send or whatever. So I replied just really basically, which was we land in Chicago at 10:45 p.m. We were coming in late on the Friday, and I wanted that to be noted because sometimes when you go past a certain time, a hotel kind of gives away your reservation. And I said, it's Valentine's weekend for us, with a little smiley face. Well, Crystal wrote back and said, Mr. Stratton, by the way, she wrote back an hour later on a Friday at 5:24 p.m. Sorry, on a Monday. And the Monday before we were coming. We're honored you chose the Ritz-Carlton for Valentine's celebration. To better enhance your stay, I've attached a spa menu of Valentine's Day and add-on amenities. We can also do some celebration balloons, flowers, or even a cake. And let us know about transportation if you need to get here. We also have a new restaurant called Turalli's just opened up, and here's a little bit about them. So I wrote back and I said, I'd love to add some roses, and a love banner would be great. I'd get the chocolate, but my wife only eats sugar-free ones. And we also wrote about the Ritz-Carlton Joshi story in our book, and I give it in my keynote talks. Thanks for continuing to show how awesome you are. Crystal then writes back, I have to say, I Googled your book and I'm intrigued. This will be my next read. As far as the roses, the specific color, how many dozen do you want? I'm like, obviously as many dozen as you can provide.
How many can you fit?
Yeah. Last, we have the balloon or the metal love banner. Also, Godiva has sugar-free chocolates. Would you like me to place a box of those in the room? And I'm like, oh, for the love of Pete. Yeah, of course.
I just want everyone to know that if I mean, obviously Crystal is a woman, but if Crystal was representing herself, Scott probably would have fallen in love with Crystal and had Valentine's Day with her. That's how he feels about customer service, like at this level. So thankfully he can't marry the Ritz-Carlton.
So we overnighted her a copy of On Selling, and she said, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. Stratton, I am lost for words. I'm very grateful. Thank you for sending me a copy of the book." And I said, "Well, your brand is always good, so good treating others is great. We figured we'd do something nice for you for a change." And that was it. And we went into the room.
But like, I almost didn't want to go. We flew late at night and it was a really long day. And, you know, it's like we're busy and I'm tired and we're already at home. And like,
I had just gotten back from another trip.
Yeah, yeah. You just got back and we're like, really want to go. And you never said anything. You didn't say anything like, maybe if you get there, there'll be a little surprise. Like, yeah, you didn't let anything drop.
I offered to stay home. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, if you're not feeling well, you're tired, we can stay home. I'm like, no. And I knew if I just got on the plane, I'd be fine. It's that trip, like from laying down in bed to the plane is very difficult sometimes. Yeah. And so then we got there. The hotel obviously is beautiful and we love going to Chicago. But then we got upstairs and there's beautiful red roses. There's rose petals everywhere. There's like a love sign. There's sugar-free chocolate. There's champagne. It was awesome.
Yeah.
You did a really good job.
Well, and
I was not expecting that at all. I'm pretty good. Like, I expect a lot from you. Like, I have good, and that's your fault. I mean, yeah, you can only blame yourself for the expectations, but I was totally surprised. It was awesome.
So aside from the fact that this being about how awesome a husband I am, there's a contrast here to hashtag humble brag, but there's a contrast here that the reason why I really wanted to bring this up, other than bragging and how wonderful it was and how good they are at the brand they've already established, is that we contrast it with a place like, any other hotel in the history of humans, but also Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And how Caesar's Palace, where we choose to stay, and we are diamond players there, which is the second highest of the tier. If we were the highest, then you need to take away my bank card. And we go, and we've stayed dozens and dozens of times at Caesar's. And we stay at the Octavius Tower, which is their high-end kind of suites. We pay to stay. We don't ask for free rooms. We don't do any of those things. And we've been diamond players for about 6-7 years there now. They have all of our information. Vegas was the pioneers of, air quotes, loyalty cards, which is the player cards. They have all of our data. They know what we do. They know where we eat. They know where we shop. Everything. I think they have like RFID chips and those things to find out where we're walking. And never has anything, even 1/10 of this feeling, happened from them. And we give them straight cash. Like, I mean, we put money into machines there on top of our room fee, which goes between $300 and $400 a night for these places, which is about the same price as the Ritz-Carlton. Because sometimes when I say, well, the Ritz-Carlton does this, they say, well, they can afford to do that. They're high-end. They're doing that. Well, no. So what happens here is Caesars, a few times, have ever reached out to me, and it's a host. So these people's jobs are to get money, more money out of the guests. And so the last time I had a host reached out and said, hey, I'm your host, blah, blah, blah. And I said to them, I said, we don't have much luck with hosts. They don't do much for us, but, you know, thanks for reaching out. And I wrote to them the last time we were going there, and I said, hey, let's give this a shot. Could you book me 2 seats at the sports book? One of the things about Caesars and a lot of the other casinos in Vegas is the sports book seats are now like all reserved, and you have to pay to use them, or your host has to get them for you. It's like $50 a seat or whatever, and you get a couple drink tickets, and fine. I don't care. I just want it done for me. And I wrote, and so this is his opportunity. He's a host. His only job is to make a player feel valued and special. And he writes back and says, here's the link to go book them. Thanks, Google. Thanks very much. If you're no better than Google, and Google would get back to me faster than this person did. It took 4 days to get back to me.
One of the things that was like the most impressive about the whole experience was, so when I got there and after the surprise, we were just talking about what we wanted to do the next day. And so the spa came out, because you mentioned the spa. And so I said, well, I could always spa, like that's good. I can always do that.
I'm out for a spa.
But it was very short notice, and so you checked in.
11 o'clock the night
before.
Yeah,
it was 11 o'clock the night before. You sent an email and you just said, like, are there any massage appointments or different treatments? And the hotel not only replied, which
the next morning
is great. Yeah. They replied in a timely manner, but in the reply, they weren't able to book us into what we wanted because all the massages were booked. But they provided times and services. Like, they did the work. They didn't just say, no, it's booked, sorry. They didn't just say, I don't know, here's the link to call the spa. They actually spoke to the spa, got the times when there were things and some options about what we might want to do. So, like, that's, it should be just like a given, because obviously that's that person's job. But at the same time, it's the only time I've ever been to a hotel and asked a question like that, and somebody has actually done something.
With Caesars, I feel like we're in Office Space. Like, I'm sitting across the table from them and said, what exactly do you do here? Right? You don't book me rooms. You don't book me sports book seats. You don't even book the golf or anything.
No.
I don't know
maybe
what you do.
Maybe someone's just spending like a whole lot more money than us. That's the only thing that makes sense to me, because...
Well, then why reach out at all? That's the thing. So
they reached out to you.
So last time I was there, me and our friend Jay were there, and I was sitting at a slot machine, and within 5 minutes of sitting there, a host came up to me and said, Mr. Stratton, and I just thought I was a fan looking for an autograph. You know how that works. And I'm like, well, yes, how you doing? And I signed his chest, and then realizing that's not what he was there for. And he's like, I'm your host, and I'm not the same host as your main one, but I'm at this property at Caesars.
There's a lot of host turnover, I think.
Right. And so he said to me, just let us know anything you need. So standing right there beside me, let us know anything you need, and we'll help you out. I'm like, oh, thank you, Chad. What I need is a late checkout tomorrow, because my friend here, Jason, is flying on a red eye back home. So how long can we extend the room for? And he looks at me and says, yeah, just pop by the host office later on and they'll take care of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what right. Chad does.
And then I went to the host office and they called the front desk and said, well, you'll have to go to the front desk and ask them. What do y'all do here?
Do you think there's some kind of strange correlation between the fact that we've never had a host last longer than 3 months and that their job is about building loyalty? Like, maybe we're bringing the wrong people into the hosting career.
It's mind-blowing. And so you flip it. Because I saw at an event I was doing for Audi in Montreal recently, the speaker before me was from the Ritz-Carlton like Training Institute. So he'd been in the organization for decades, and he was very polished, very great suit, and talking about the stuff, very opposite of Scott. And he said at the talk that the Ritz-Carlton gives, and they call them ladies and gentlemen. So every time he referred to them, he said, the ladies and gentlemen of Ritz-Carlton.
I think that's nice. I would like you to start referring to me as the... as ladies.
Yeah, lady.
The lady of the house.
The lady of the house, right, of the manor. And so he said every employee has up to $2,000 discretion to make it right for a guest on the spot.
So like whatever they want to do.
And then he said, this is a room full of car salespeople and car sales dealership owners saying, oh, I'm not doing that for my team. No chance. And he said, do you know what the average cost was over the next past number of years to make it right on the spot? $67. That was the average cost to make something right immediately. And she said, do you think that's empowering to the ladies and gentlemen of the Ritz-Carlton? And everybody's like, yep.
Absolutely.
Right? And then most places, like, you have to get $5 approved. Right? It's above my pay grade.
Which is crazy, because you're putting the entire value of your brand in that person's hand every time they interact with someone, but right. You're worried about the $2,000 that they might
spend. And it shows
spend.
Trust.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. It shows that you understand. And they're not walking around with stacks of cash on them and like making it rain everywhere. It's like, you know, it's like, we got 2 G's today and giving away. It's that I'm allowed to say, you know what? I need to make this right. They're the front line.
Without having to check. So like, it's going to happen more quickly. You're not going to have to then go to somebody. Right. You can just react.
I have the power to make it right away. Because on the front line, you improve your front line, you improve the bottom line. End of story. End of the chapter. That's how this stuff works. And I keep getting more and more impressed. Like every time I write to them or do something, I'm testing them, right? It's like when somebody tweets us, they're testing us to see if we reply to it. Same with us. And they certainly passed with flying colors. And then Chicago was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And you're very sweet.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that need sweet. To be made right.
Yes.
Okay. So really, I think this has won for me the thing that I've been sent the most.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think says a lot about me, and I'm proud of that. This is from the New York Post, and it says, Doritos to make lady-friendly chips that don't crunch for women. So I love when companies find a problem that I didn't know I had, like the crunchiness of chips. It says, bosses at Doritos have revealed they are to launch a new lady-friendly version of the snack, which are quieter to eat and a lot less messy. Food and drinks giant PepsiCo, which owns Dorito, has claimed research has found women do not like to crunch loudly or lick their fingers when eating in front of others. Global chief exec Indra Nooyi told Freakonomics Radio, although women would love to crunch chips loudly, lick their fingers, and pour crumbs from the bag into their mouth afterwards, they prefer not to do it in public. You watch a lot of the young guys eat chips. They love their Doritos, and they lick their fingers with great glee. And when they reach the bottom of the bag, they pour out the little broken pieces into their mouth because they don't want to lose the taste of the flavor.
Until you get it in your eye.
And the broken chips in the bottom. Yeah. Women would love to do the same, but they don't. Mm. They don't like to crunch too loudly in public, and they don't lick their fingers. I do not know if I've ever laughed so loudly at an article ever. Like, isn't the entire idea of, like, nachos, or Doritos are just nachos, right? Corn nachos with that certain flavoring on it, like corn chips, that they're crunchy? So are carrots out? Like, am I not allowed to eat carrots?
I was meaning to talk to you about the being the lady of the
apples.
House, that you should be eating chips more ladylike.
It says the low crunch triangular snacks will even come in special packs specifically designed to fit into women's handbags.
Oh, thank goodness. Been waiting.
I don't understand. Are men not allowed to eat them?
Hey, look.
Do you want less crunchy Doritos? Is that something that you want?
A friend of ours on the show, Jay, still brings up the fact that I once licked my fingers and put them back in the Doritos bag.
Okay, I'm not saying there's a lot of disgusting habits associated with Doritos.
You're looking right at me when you say that.
Yeah, well, I love you. But I don't think that's the point. What is the research? I don't want to see what the research is.
Now they could have, and here's the thing, they could have come out with it by just saying they just crunch softer. Just not for women, just for people that don't like it. And then even showing the study, but when you center on the fact that it's lady Doritos, lady chips, that's maybe I just want a gentle chip.
I just
chip.
Didn't know that women didn't. I've been a woman my whole life, maybe, and I didn't know that women don't like to crunch things.
Maybe they're pH balanced for women. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's a special formula.
We don't like to lick our fingers. Nobody should lick their fingers when they're eating chips.
Sorry?
Nobody. Ever.
That's where the flavor builds up. What else are you going to do with them? You ever try
You've
to get cheesy?
Everything else. Did you wash your hands before you started eating the Doritos?
I haven't washed my hand in 5 days.
Oh, what my God. There's so many problems here to sort through.
Where? How else would you get the cheesy orange from when you eat Cheetos?
It's on the chips. You eat the chips. It has the flavor
on
them.
But it builds up. It's like a callus of cheddar on your fingers that you need to get rid of. You can't wipe it.
How many of them are you eating that you're getting a callus of flavor?
A bag?
Oh my gosh, a bag, that is not a serving size.
That's what it is, one serving, a bag of cheesies, of Cheez-Its. We're going to eat three and put it away?
There's a lot of room between three and the whole bag.
Is there?
Yeah,
it's like just like a momentum.
Chips difference.
Wayne, tell me you're not going to lick off the cheese.
How do you not?
Oh, thank you, because you can't wipe, it doesn't wipe properly.
Honestly?
It's like picking up dog poop with a paper towel, it doesn't work. Right? Straight out of the league, if you've watched the show.
So, yeah, stop it, Doritos. Stop it.
Still saying, like, your fingers are fine.
Are they just going to be, like, they're just going to be, like, stale and soft?
Yeah.
It's right. It's pita chips.
Yeah.
I do
like the pita chips with a little bit of crispiness out. We go to Jack Astor's or something like that. I like that. I like that a lot. Allison does not. On with the show. This is from DigiDay, which is... As promised, Facebook traffic to news publisher declines again post news feed change. How you doing over there?
I'm okay.
You good? Allison's losing her voice. I'm doing a show takeover right now. So we didn't talk about this in the past few shows and because we like building suspense. And one of the big changes that's happened was Facebook is saying, look, brands and brand posts will be going even less now into the news feed from like a 5% of your news feed being brands that you like to 4%. That includes sponsored posts from the brands as well. So DigiDay starts the article and says, just a month after Facebook said it show less news in its news feeds, news publishers are already feeling the brunt, multiple data sources show. Chartbeat data showed Facebook traffic to publishers declined 6% since the beginning of January. Facebook had already been sending less traffic to publishers, with referrals down 15% in 2017, according to Chartbeat, which measures traffic to around 50,000 publishers globally, with a skew towards news publishers. All told, Facebook now makes up 30% of Chartbeat's publishers' referral traffic to Google's 40%. The declines are not a surprise. Facebook has said as much, warning that news as a percentage of newsfeed content will go from 5% to 4%. That would imply publishers can broadly expect a 20% drop. Asked about the actual decline since the January announcement, the company emailed a statement saying, "The recent newsfeed changes we announced mean people will connect with friends more and public pages less. That means news publishers' reach on the platform may go down." Women's lifestyle publisher Pop Sugar has an in-house tool called TrendRank that monitors social activity across 700 publishers in 17 categories. Overall, Facebook traffic to publishers has been flat, but traffic in the news category, which includes all major news publishers, New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, and BuzzFeed, was down 14% after a sharp drop in the months prior, according to the tool. BuzzFeed, for its part, said it wasn't impacted, and others named wouldn't comment on the record. Other categories that saw declines were tech and fitness, which could be seasonal, but the news decline seems to fulfill Facebook's pledge to deprioritize content that doesn't share well. A third source, True Anthem, which enables media companies to distribute and track their content on social media using AI, looked at its client base of several hundred publishers over the past 90 days and found that overall reach has increased since Facebook's January's announcement. But all categories aren't performing equally. Digital-only publishers, a category includes BuzzFeed and Upworthy, were down 11.3%, while local news grew 25.8% and magazines grew 3.6%.
And that's just numbers for being seen, right?
Yeah, that's reach. So it
has nothing to do with like tracking through. Like they're not. It's not like the newspapers are seeing like less subscribers.
So this is traffic to their site.
Traffic. Okay. So it is sort of follow through.
Right. So there is. That's where the money is, and we've kind of been dabbling in this for years now. Where we warned about it on stage in Vegas at New Media Expo years ago, which is when you build your house on rented land, you got to pay the landlord, and then you know, they can also move you out.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes the fact that we had this whole movement the past 2 years, 3 years of building your pretty much. We asked, do we need a website anymore? People were saying, do we need a website anymore?
We have a Facebook page.
And we build that presence and we put all of our eggs into that basket. And then you have Google on the other side of things showing your content without going to your page. If you've seen that, if you ask a question to Google and it shows you the answer, in Google search, here's a full answer. It's from a web page. We've removed all that traffic from going there. We remove that traffic from going there. We remove any news media's, almost every news media's only form of revenue, which is advertising. And that is totally removed from the picture. That's totally removed from the equation. And so we're setting ourselves up for this content-less world when you abandon your own site. And that's an issue. To me, that's a problem because what happens is it's a Ponzi scheme almost that Facebook's created here, and we fell for it. We all have, because they say, look, create your brand page, share your brand's content on your site, your blog, your posts, what are YouTube links, just come on in. And you're like, yeah, and you all walk into the door and you do it. And they're like, okay, now make some of that content on Facebook now. We'll help you out. We'll give it a boost in EdgeRank algorithm. It'll get seen by more. Oh, cool. Keep building. We put the Facebook page into our TV commercials. Come on over to here. We spend millions of dollars building up presence in Facebook because that's where the world is. Hey, now with video, don't worry about YouTube now. Upload it directly to us. And although you lose the monetization that you've been doing on YouTube, we got you. So you start filling the funnel with video and you go in there. And they go, okay, well now, we want you to still reach your audience. We'll give you that chance, but there's too much in the news feed. So now you got to pay to reach the people you just built up. You're like, fine. Now people start paying for it. And you're like, yeah, that's too much now. Now you're going to be even less there. To the point where now they're saying it's going to be a separate tab.
Yeah, they have to choose to look
at it. You have to go choose to look at it, which might as well not be there for the most part.
I was thinking about it too, in terms of reviews. Like we work with a lot of different companies and I think it's because we've had a few people in the house over the last couple of weeks just doing different things in the house. And all of them asked for a review and we talk about reviews a lot on the show and the power of them and how we use places like Homestars and what's the woman's name, the one in the States that's like Homestars? What's the somebody's list?
Angie's List.
Yeah, so like that kind of a site, right, is all based on reviews. And, you know, one of the things that concerns me is you're collecting all these reviews on Facebook, right? And you're like, look at all my, I'm this many stars, I have all these reviews. But if people aren't taking that information and also having it on their site or taking it off, then literally that could go down tomorrow and you would have no reviews. Like, yeah. There's so much traffic and so much work being spent trying to get those reviews that I'm not sure, like, you don't own them. And mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like I'm hoping that companies who, like someone we had here today, is like, they live and die by reviews. That's how people yeah. know about them. So you just want to make sure that you, if you're getting reviews and if your business is driven by that, do something else with them too and have them and own them, you know, yeah. the content of them.
Well, that's what I do with the talks, right? If they leave a review on LinkedIn, a recommendation, yeah. I screenshot it, put it on the site.
But do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, if HomeStars went, yeah. like, I'm not saying that they are, but if HomeStars wasn't there tomorrow for whatever reason, or if HomeStars decided to charge per review or do some kind of, like, cost to it, mm-hmm. they could lose all that traffic to their business.
Yeah, it's a dangerous thing with them. And here's the problem, too. Again, we've been saying for years that the problem is a lot of people in social media as consultants came out and pitched things like Facebook as the great free, return of awesome. Yeah. And then it wasn't, the whole point of all these things was never about free and about a content marketing strategy. And I believe in content to a certain extent. And I just don't think it's the be all and end all necessarily. I think that social media has been, as always has and always will be, a service platform that when people have an issue with something and they come somewhere and you're there, they can drop you a line. You're open, you have a fairly quick turnaround in your communication. But if I want to message you on Facebook Messenger about the package I ordered, then let me do it.
Yeah.
But I just think there's a lot of focus on the wrong end here, which is Facebook, I have to be seen in everybody's newsfeed all the time. I don't think that's the case. And I still think that compelling content matters, relevant content matters, but there's also relevant advertising matters.
And if you're doing, and at the core, if you're serving your customers and they're happy, they'll share the story as well. So it doesn't necessarily stop them. It's not like every time a customer mentions your brand name, you're getting charged for that. That's not how it works.
Yeah, I'd take all my money and put it into search, paid search, and just go that way. And just if people are already looking for the product, that's who I want to get. Anyway, that's a whole other show.
But we're still doing this show.
Yeah.
I got my voice back a little bit.
One other thing here. So
Twitter.
This is an interesting one about the legality or the illegality of embedding tweets. It's a really interesting case. This says, last week, Judge Catherine Forrest of the Southern District of New York handed down a judgment that sent shockwaves through the internet. Ruling in a case that pitted photographer Justin Goldman against several news sites, including Yahoo and Boston Globe and Heavy.com, the judge ruled that the news sites may be held liable for embedding tweets that contained his photo. The ruling has the potential to upturn over a decade of legal thinking in the U.S. and drastically shift the responsibilities websites have when it comes to embedding content. This, in turn, may mean significant changes to YouTube, Twitter, and any service that enables content to be embedded elsewhere. So I'll give you the gist of here. Explain what happened. In 2016, Goldman snapped a photo of New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady and Boston Celtics general manager Danny Ainge and Scott Stratton all walking down the street.
That is not true. Those three people have never walked down the street together.
I was not there. The photo came as the Celtics were working trying to recruit Kevin Durant to the team, a fantastic Boston basketball player. Goldman, however, didn't post the photo on Twitter and instead posted it to his Snapchat story. At least some of his followers took the photo and posted it elsewhere online. The image soon made its way to Reddit and Twitter, where several news outlets then picked up on it. However, those news outlets did not copy the image and upload it to their servers. Instead, they simply embedded some of the already infringing tweets that contained the image. Still, Goldman sued, claiming that the publications violated his right to control the public display of his image. But despite the lawsuit, most felt that the publications would be fairly safe. The reason, because in 2007, the Ninth Circuit handed down a ruling in the Perfect 10 versus Amazon case. The appeals court put the focus on where the images were stored. The liability would rise with those who stored the image and or uploaded it, not those who merely linked to it. That's true even if the, quote, link is inline embedded that is largely invisible to the end user, meaning if I see it, I just think it's on your site. This established the server test, which has more or less been the guiding standard when it comes to embedded the past decade. Yeah.
Is embedded, so embedded is the same thing as hosting it on your own?
No.
So embedded is a type of link that looks like.
Yeah, so it's a source code. And then so when I go to your news site, I see the tweet and the photo sitting there, but it's actually embedded the tweet sitting there. So if you delete the tweet, the embedding is gone.
Okay, that's what I want to
know. So it's like somebody who embeds our YouTube video somewhere else, right? We can still control that video.
Okay.
Instead of downloading the image and then uploading it again.
That makes sense.
So what this is saying is, Well, if they downloaded it and then used it, it's different. But they're embedding something that's already sitting over on Twitter. So that's Twitter's problem.
Because they have the original control, right?
That's the original person who tweeted its problem.
Yeah, that
makes sense. And the photographer saying, no. The news site is still using it as if they uploaded it anyways, and I should be remunerated for this, or at least, and also have control to say whether you can or cannot use it. I have not given you permission.
Yeah.
I did not give this Twitter user permission. I put it up on Snapchat, which disappears in 24 hours.
Yeah.
You're on the hook. So this ruling isn't done. This is the first step of it. Really, the ruling, what came out here after I read the rest of the case, was simply the judges said this lawsuit is allowed to continue.
Okay.
It wasn't stopped in its tracks. This is a lower court than the one that had the ruling in 2007. But it was a big deal because everything else up to this was like, nope, it won't have any grounds. You can't do it because of the server test, really. So it's interesting. And I agree with him in the lawsuit of it where I don't agree with him of taking photos of two people in public and saying it's his image necessarily. We can get into a whole debate about that. It's the fact that news agencies can't just brush their hands off and say, not ours, because we just embedded a tweet.
Because what it would open up the doors to is them doing that with every single image.
Which they do.
So, because if they're allowed to do that with no responsibility, then I'm going to say, I'm just going to do that for all our images. I have no responsibility on anything I put on my newspaper.
Make a fake
on my
Twitter
site.
Account.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Uses
put
photos,
it there,
yeah.
embed it. Mm-hmm. So they have to have some responsibility.
Right.
And they not only, you know, this is one of those situations where we're like, should it have to be illegal for it to be wrong? It's so clearly wrong, but and I think it should be illegal as well. If you put something up there, you should have a responsibility. And it's kind of like on a more like a business level, what we talk about, where if you put something on Twitter, you're endorsing that tweet, right? Because you're putting it on your page. You don't get to just say, well, somebody else said it. If you put it there in a non, like, this is the worst thing ever, you know, in non-argument
no context,
way,
yeah.
then you're endorsing it. And so, but because these are sites that are making money, I assume, revenue off advertising and all kinds of things, that they have to be responsible for what they put. They should be held to a higher standard than, you know, Sue, who embedded on her Facebook page, I think, because they're making money. They're an entity.
Very much so. All right, ladies and gentlemen of the Unpodcast listenership, we appreciate your time.
I'm so sorry for the coughing, guys.
It's okay.
That'll Someone send me chicken soup. I'm a vegetarian, but vegetable soup.
I'll eat the chicken. Talk to you next week.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.